Circuit. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
A very good morning to everyone. The court will hear oral argument first this morning in number 043819, TrueServe Corporation against Flagler's Incorporated.
Flagler. Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm Jim Flagler. I represent the appellants, Flagler's Incorporated and Ms. Alice Flagler. The similarity of the name is no coincidence. I am a member of the family, and she is my mom. They were defendants below. This is an appeal of a summary judgment that was entered against Flagler's and Mrs. Flagler, unsophisticated businesses, an unsophisticated woman in business matters, over a member agreement that resulted in damages of $82,000 and $61,000 in attorney's fees and costs, and a guarantee that was signed in Kentucky, presented in Kentucky, that resulted in alleged liability by Ms. Flagler. I would like to address, and I'm prepared to address, of course, any issue in our briefs, but I would like to address the issues in this order this morning unless the court has a preference of a different order. Number one, the absence of personal jurisdiction by the district court over Mrs. Flagler. Number two, the abuse of discretion in not abstaining, and I realize I have a heavy burden here, but I think we meet it. Number three, the absence of subject matter jurisdiction because of Rooker-Feldman. And number four, if we have time, the summary judgment matters related to the guarantee and the member agreement. First, on the absence of personal jurisdiction over Mrs. Flagler. This review by Your Honors is de novo. The burden is on TrueServe. The issue is whether or not, as TrueServe plainly states, it is the fact that she signed a contract that provided TrueServe with the right to sue her in Illinois that is dispositive. And that's as far as they go. All the evidence in the record is by Mrs. Flagler about the absence of personal jurisdiction and minimum contacts. The question is whether or not the clause, if suit becomes necessary, you are authorized to file in any court of competent jurisdiction in the state of Illinois, is a forum selection clause at all. And if it is a clause, how is it construed? Well, we have some issues, some constructs from the circuit. One, in Donovan, our chief judge said before considering the validity of a forum selection clause, you got to consider whether or not it really is one. And in ADE, this court said, when you're looking at a guarantee, the guarantor is entitled to the benefit of any doubt. There's abundant doubt here. Number one, there's authority doubt. There is no case cited to this court from the Seventh Circuit that holds that a clause with this language is a forum selection clause that supports personal jurisdiction. As a matter of fact, if we go to Illinois, the only court we could find, the only case we could find is over 130 years old, and it holds, Brown versus Abbott, that a court of competent jurisdiction was where the defendant resided, which happened to be in Boston. We do have some additional authority, the RAR case, which, by the way, found no personal jurisdiction. There was no forum selection clause involved, but no personal jurisdiction. In RAR, the court found that the signing of a contract was insufficient in and of itself. And the court has also given us some guidance in the Continental Bank case where there is no forum selection clause, and the court said four factors were sufficient for jurisdiction. Two of those factors are not here, and I contend they're important. The first two factors was contract delivered in Illinois, and second factor, contract executed in Illinois. not here. The evidence is contract delivered in Kentucky, executed in Kentucky. Why is that important? We have an unsophisticated defendant. I love them all, but they are not sophisticated business people. They did not have a lawyer involved when these transactions occurred. The guarantee was presented to them in Kentucky. And I would wager a guess that any reasonable person in this room would conclude that they didn't give 5 seconds attention to this form, to this clause, whether form selection or not. And they had no clue that sometime down the road they would be hailed into Chicago. Let's turn the tables for a second and have the guarantee delivered in Chicago. That means they were here. That means they had a discussion here. That means under minimum contacts and under the Continental Bank case, once delivered and executed here, jurisdiction. The court has several cases in which jurisdiction has not been found. I would say the doubts in the authorities, first doubt, construe in favor of guarantor. Second doubt, true serves mind and true serves actions. Why is that a doubt? They don't use this language anymore. Their language now says in their guarantee, and this is in the Crawbaugh case, Northern District, the guarantor consents to the exclusive personal jurisdiction and venue of Illinois courts. Now, I posit this question. If court of competent jurisdiction eliminated the need for minimum contacts analysis, why did TrueServe add that clause? The answer is they concluded the same as I believe this court should conclude, that the clause is insufficient. Number three, there are record doubts. And why are there record doubts? Because the record is uncontroverted on the evidence that there are no minimum contacts. The only evidence is Mrs. Flegel's declaration and the declaration of Mark Flegel, and I believe I touched it in a declaration of mine, but I'm not sure. There is absolutely no effort by TrueServe to contradict any. They only say the form selection clause is sufficient without telling us why. As a result, in a situation where the evidence in the record says no negotiation over the clause, unsophisticated defendants signed and executed and delivered in Kentucky, and the burden of proof is on TrueServe, we contend the district court respectfully erred, and the case should be reversed and dismissed as to the guarantor. Now, one might ask, because I have, what if this court said court of competent jurisdiction means competent for subject matter and personal? Does that mean the clause is a nullity? Well, no. Obviously, number one, if the guarantor was already in Illinois, the clause is enforceable. Obviously, number two, if the guarantor had sufficient contacts, the clause is enforceable. And observation number three, obviously, even if it were a nullity, your honors have the authority to do that. We consider clauses in their effect and whether or not they're nullities all the time. Form selection clauses, unreasonable and unfair. Usury provisions in contract, violations of the law. Covenants not to compete, too restrictive. So that should not hold this court's hesitation for one moment, and the claims against Ms. Flegel should be dismissed. The second part of my presentation, Your Honors, deals with Colorado River. By our review, Your Honors, the facts and issues presented by this action are unique in the circuit. I realize this panel has a distinguished history in Colorado River analysis. I also realize that it is rare that a court of appeals is asked to overturn a district court who refuses to stay. I suspect that's for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's hard to get up here after a stay has been refused. And number two, there are very rare circumstances. I submit these are those. As the jury heard in Kentucky and is in the record, the verdict, TrueServe fraudulently induced Flegels into a member agreement, and TrueServe committed fraud, causing $1.3 million in damages.
What's the status of the appeal of that?
It is pending, Your Honor. Briefing, I believe, is due by TrueServe sometime in May, and our briefing will be due 30 days thereafter. We hope it to be shorter than that. It is on track. But unlike Fortune 100, such as AAR or ExxonMobil, I'm not representing a client who can send out legions of lawyers to various different forums, file insurance litigation, litigation as insurance policies, or litigation, and do the same thing in several different forums. And unlike Donovan, I'm not representing wealthy sophisticated tax shelter investors. What I am representing are good, honest people. I say that because I detect in this circuit's decisions a distinction between business people with sophistication claiming, oh, I really didn't mean it, or oh, I really shouldn't be there, and individuals who may not have known everything that was going on their side and were presented with a document that they could not negotiate and they could not modify. The first consideration is whether or not the actions are parallel. The district court, I think, correctly found that. TrueServe says now the district court was wrong. The Kentucky action, by the district court's admission, raised tort claims, contract claims, and declaratory judgment claims, raised all of the issues that would be encompassed in the microcosm.
What contract claims were raised in the state litigation?
Your Honor, the contract claims were raised on whether or not the obligations by Flegals to TrueServe were enforceable. There was a declaratory judgment request that the contracts be ruled void based on TrueServe's inequitable conduct under appropriate
Thank
law.
You.
The chronology of the two cases shows the parallel nature of the case and what I consider to be the mischief that is caused. The Kentucky case is filed in February 2003. In March of 2003, TrueServe moves to dismiss, and in April, the motion is denied. In May of 2003, this case is filed in the district court in Illinois. The Kentucky case is set for trial in November of that year. For a trial setting in July of 2005, the evidence is in the record. The reason it was July, not March, is because TrueServe's lawyers said they were too busy in the first half of the year. The judge was ready to hear it. 4 days later, the Illinois District Court issued an opinion denying our motion to abstain or dismiss. We fast forward now to the middle of 2004 when the Kentucky case is set for trial. June 28th, TrueServe files its answer in Kentucky. July 21, the Illinois court issues a summary judgment against my clients on part of the case, not all, but gives TrueServe a 54B certification, which we thought was improvident. In fact, it ended up being improvident. 5 days later, the Kentucky trial started. And as comedy is from the federal court to the state court, it is from the state to the federal. And because of the 54B certification, we didn't get into the issues that were allegedly decided in a final judgment here 5 days before. The Kentucky jury verdict on July 30 found $1.3 million in damages against TrueServe and, importantly, that the member agreement was fraudulently induced. Kentucky judgment, August 9. Judgment below, September 28. That had to be fixed, dated October 24. And on November 15, the Kentucky judge overruled the motions for new trial. This is totally different from the AAR case, in our opinion. AAR was Greek courts. Is that important? Yes, in this circuit. Under our construction, we owe a special obligation of comity to state courts, not to foreign courts. Are the claims distinct, as in AAR? There was a section of the lease that talked about absolute and unconditional obligations. In this case, the Kentucky action dealt with fraud of the membership agreement, a contract breach claims, and damages caused by TrueServe's conduct. It is likely, and it was substantially likely, that the decisions on the factual, and this is the AAR language, legal and factual issues in the state court would support the issues and resolution of the issues here. In AAR, the issues of interpretation of the contract were not injected by AAR. Here they were injected by TrueServe on an interpretation of the form selection clause. And there wasn't any Greek compulsory counterclaim rule, or at least you couldn't tell from the affidavits from the Greek lawyers. And here there are compulsory counterclaim rules. Should I have time, I could go through the 10 factors of the state court assuming jurisdiction over the analysis under Rooker-Feldman, and we would find that those factors, seven support abstention and three are neutral at worst. But more importantly, I believe there is a fundamental issue here in terms of Colorado River, and that is, as this court has said, the parties are entitled to a complete analysis of the 10 factors. And I submit that that did not happen here. I submit that once one reads the district court's opinion, the district court became disturbed, I will use that word, with a Kentucky court ruling on a forum selection clause in an agreement with a business in Chicago. Your honors may agree with the district court. I happen to not. I think even though there was a circumstance where the Kentucky court case was filed first, that case should have been given the dignity to which the analysis allowed it. I see my white light is on, and I will reserve 5.
Thank you, Mr. Flegel. We'll hear now from Mr. Chisler. I'm sorry.
May it please the court, David Chisler on behalf of TrueServe Corporation, the appellee here. Let me start by addressing the first argument that Mr. Flegel raised with respect to the guarantee. I think we can handle that in a relatively short period of time. I believe that the defendant has confused two concepts, forum selection and personal jurisdiction. The defendant never moved to transfer venue in this case. They're now arguing that there's no personal jurisdiction, but the guarantee that Ms. Flegel signed, and in fact the district court found that she signed three separate guarantees, consent to Illinois jurisdiction. And once a party consents to Illinois jurisdiction, there is personal jurisdiction over that party. The defendant may have attempted to try and transfer venue to a district court in Kentucky, but that was not done here. And although the defendant raises now and points argues that the issue of personal jurisdiction is reviewed de novo, in fact, the defendant is relying on facts about the sophistication of Ms. Flegel, which are not reviewed de novo, and the district court made a finding that the personal guarantee was valid and sufficient to consent to her jurisdiction here, and in particular noted that she had signed three separate guarantees, and in fact, she obviously does have access to sophisticated counsel who did fly in from Texas to represent her here today and who represented her in the case below. So I think that disposes of the personal jurisdiction issue with respect to Ms. Flegel. With respect to Colorado River, we do believe that the cases are not parallel, and the key question as to whether the cases are parallel is whether the Kentucky case had the likelihood of disposing of the case before this district court. The issues in the case before this district court were never raised in the Kentucky case, and in fact, they were not disposed of
Wouldn't
by the Kentucky case.
Wouldn't the disposition of the contractual claim in the Kentucky court really, as a practical matter, answer the question posed by the litigation in Illinois?
No, Your Honor. The first of all, the jury finding as to the contract in the member agreement, which only part of the district case is based on, was never incorporated into any judgment or any finding by the court. It's just a jury verdict that has no force and effect. And it was the only issue even raised on the member agreement below had to do with the application of the forum selection clause to the claims raised by Flegal, not with respect to the claims raised by TrueServe.
Were the jury instructions included instructions relating to the contract?
There was a special interrogatory asking the jury if the contract that was signed in 2000 was the result of misrepresentations, and the jury answered yes. Incidentally, it is in the record in this case that even if the 2000 contract, which the jury found was induced by representations, was held to be void with respect to the claims that TrueServe is making in this case, even if that member agreement was void altogether, number one, there was a previous agreement that was in effect from 1997 that was identical and imposed the exact same obligations on the Flegals, and there are several other agreements raised in the district court's case upon which the damages are based that do not rely on the member agreement itself. There are promissory notes and fund agreements. So that is essentially a non-starter. And the fact that the district court here ruled before the case in Kentucky was completed had absolutely nothing to do with whether the court in Kentucky would have ever dealt with TrueServe's receivable claims. Those claims were never pled and never made an issue in the Kentucky case.
What's the amount?
What's
the amount of the judgment you obtained below?
I believe it's $143,000. I can certainly provide the exact
number. I just approximately.
Right, approximately. So as that shows, the cases are not parallel, and of course this court can affirm the district court's ruling on the abstention for any reason. I think our briefs are also clear on the factors which are entitled to, I believe as this court has said, a double deference. When you go through those factors, I don't think there's any question that the district court was proper not to abstain. To be candid, I thought this court might be more interested in the Rooker-Feldman doctrine issues, which were not addressed in much detail by the defendant, but I am prepared to address those. I think that it's helpful in addressing the Rooker-Feldman question here to refer back to the precise language of the test that this court has set forth for a Rooker-Feldman question. The language was set out in the Gash case and then repeated recently in the Zurich case, and the language is as follows. The Rooker-Feldman doctrine asks, is the federal plaintiff seeking to set aside a state judgment, or does he present some independent claim, albeit one that denies a legal conclusion that a state court has reached in a case in which he was a party? If the former, then the district court lacks jurisdiction. If the latter, then there is jurisdiction, and the state law determines whether the defendant prevails under principles of preclusion.
Wouldn't this entire issue really be controlled now by the recent Supreme Court case in ExxonMobil? 3 weeks ago, the Supreme Court pretty much addressed this entire field and the issue before us.
Your Honor, I apologize. I don't know the answer to that question, but I certainly provide that. I think it is addressed either way by the Seventh Circuit decisions. And the most important part of the language, which I just read, states that even if TrueServe's federal claim denied a legal conclusion made in the Kentucky court, that alone is not sufficient to subject the federal claim to the Rooker-Feldman doctrine. There's a confusion, I think, in the defendant's arguments between whether a federal claim seeks to set aside a judgment or whether it seeks to present an independent claim. I think it's clear in this case that that the Trucer's claim was independent. And it may help to contrast the case here in, with a different case in which a ruling on a forum selection clause might invoke the Rooker-Feldman doctrine. Let's suppose that after the Kentucky court made its ruling on the forum selection clause with respect to Flegal's claims, Trucer had filed a federal claim, instead a breach of contract, instead of its account receivables damage, suppose it sued Flegal saying you breached the contract by filing a lawsuit in Kentucky when you had signed a forum selection clause, and we want to recover from Flegal's the damages relating to that, the fact that Trucer now has to litigate a case in Kentucky. And suppose the damages were reasonably in excess of $75,000, so it got into federal court on diversity jurisdiction with that claim. That sort of claim would run smack into the state court's judgment because, in fact, it would exist only because the state court had required Trucer to litigate in Kentucky. So that is a situation, though, that's very different than the case here. Here, I think it's clear that the federal the ruling in the Kentucky State Court does not is not even inconsistent with the federal claim here, because the ruling in the Kentucky State Court merely said that with respect to Flegal's claims, and particularly their claims are based on a tort of having to do with alleged false representations made to Flegal's in connection with building a new store, had nothing to do with an account receivable claim. With respect to those claims, it would be inappropriate to enforce the forum selection clause. The Kentucky court said absolutely nothing about whether TrueServe could enforce the forum selection clause on its receivables claim that were clearly covered by the agreements that had forum selection clauses in them. The court has no further questions. That concludes my argument.
Thank you, Mr. Shiswell.
Thank you.
You have 4.5 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor, if I might begin by addressing the abstention doctrine very briefly. I located last night, and if Your Honor would like a letter on the ExxonMobil case, I will do so. I did not bring it up in the preliminary argument. It's our position that ExxonMobil does not apply. And it is obvious here for what the elements of ExxonMobil were. Recall that the first case was filed in state court against ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil filed a federal case in New Jersey in district court, professedly as an insurance policy, because ExxonMobil was concerned about a statute of limitations that they might not have available to them in Delaware. The case proceeded to trial in Delaware. ExxonMobil asserted the same claims in the federal court, in the state court in Delaware, got a judgment for $400 million that it's trying to keep at the Delaware Supreme Court. The issue there was the district court below held that the federal jurisdiction terminated when the Delaware Superior Court entered judgment on the jury verdict, and the Supreme Court said, no, we're going to let the insurance policy continue in the federal court. We claim this case is different. In this case, TrueServe asked the state court to enforce a forum selection clause, presented evidence. The state court said no. TrueServe then turned around and filed this suit on the same forum selection clause. Recall in this circuit, and I think this still survives ExxonMobil, that interlocutory orders and orders other than final judgments may be subject to Rooker-Feldman, and these are one, in our opinion. Once the state court ruled, as asked by TrueServe had one option, and that option was to take up the Kentucky state court ruling. TrueServe says, well, that's only on Flegal's claims. Well, that's not exactly the way it was presented to the district court. The district court was presented by TrueServe that the forum selection clause should be enforced because the majority of the claims are contractual, declaratory judgment, and the kinds of claims that the forum selection clause would address. And, oh, by the way, Flegal's had a fraud claim, they say in their briefing before this court. Under those circumstances, Your Honors, and the cases that have been decided in this circuit. Kamiliowicz is one of them, as well as Maple Lanes. We think that this poses the circumstance under which this court can determine that Rooker-Feldman precludes this case from going forward. If I might, just a minute, should the court be inclined not to dismiss all of the claims for the reasons that I've presented, as to the guarantor, if the court is inclined to agree with TrueServe's position that there is personal jurisdiction, I noted not only one did we get a case site on court of competent jurisdiction being a valid forum selection clause, we also didn't hear what in the record supports personal jurisdiction over Ms. Flegel or an explanation of why only two of the four continental factors is sufficient. But if the court held that jurisdiction was proper, our first issue was that the guarantee did not cover the entire debt, and there's a material issue of fact on that. Why is that important? That's $40,000 worth of the guarantee that was held against Mrs. Flegel. The guarantor is accorded the benefit of any doubt. That's the ADE case. Circumstances that change between principal and the creditor change the guarantor's obligation are not enforceable under the guarantee. Did that occur here? Yes. Massive new building, all part of the Kentucky case, $2 to $3 million in additional debt. And these were loans. And recall, loans are not in the guarantee. And TrueServe knows how to include loans. All we need to go look at is TrueServe versus ST Yards, which is a Northern District opinion that shows that its current guarantees do, in fact, talk about installment loans. If there is a question in the guarantee, that question should be answered in favor of the guarantor. Thank Your Honors for your time and your attention.
The court thanks both Mr. Flegel and Mr. Shizawar for their fine briefs and oral arguments, and the case will be taken under advisement.